high 78. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 70 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
And good morning, everybody. It is a glorious Friday in Tuscaloosa. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show. Fridays at the Free. As always, on game weekends, I'm live at Innisfree Irish Pub, 1925 University Boulevard. And I know they don't open until 11 a.m., but as I say every week, and we've had every week that I've been here, we've had probably minimum of three, I think one time as many as six or seven people that have come by a little bit early, slid in the side door over here next to the stage and hung out until they opened at 11 a.m. and had lunch. We'll remind you that this is a home weekend, so it's the game day menu that's in effect for today and all weekend. No Lucky Lunch beating three today. On Fridays of home games, they do the game day weekend or the game day menu, but plenty of great options there for you for lunch. And, of course, obviously all the incredible beer selection, cocktails, whatever it is you want to do to get your football weekend started early, you can do so at Innisfree Pub beginning at 9 a.m. this morning. I'm live up until 11 a.m. And as I said, if you want to come by and see me, I've got a few of these Texas Roadhouse Dinner for Two coupons, little cards that I can give out. I gave several of our listeners some last week. And also, of course, if you want to hang out and have lunch at 11 a.m., you can do so. We got a great show on tap for you today. I mean, we are really packed with great guests, great information. Also, our Bama trivia contest coming up at 10:30, courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. We're giving away a full-size Hey Vols print featuring Roman Harper in 2005, making the big hit to cause the fumble when Tennessee was going in for what could have been the game-winning touchdown, and Alabama went down and kicked the field goal and won that game. It was a great game in 2005. Roman Harper signed this print. It is hand-signed by Roman Harper and the artist Greg Gamble. So it is a very expensive print when it's hand-signed by the participants like that. That makes it even more special. It's already beautiful. But hand-signed by the artist, numbered and signed by Roman Harper. Alabama won that game 6-3, and Harper forced that fumble, and then Jamie Christensen kicked the game-winning field goal 6-3. At that point in the season, Alabama was undefeated, and of course went on that year to win 10 games and have a great season. Mike Shula's best season by far in 2005. So we will give that away at 10:30 with our Bama football trivia contest, courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery, University of Ball. Also, my SEC point spread predictions, and this is one of those rare weekends when it's all SEC versus SEC. There are eight games. Everybody in the conference plays someone else from within the conference. So there is no SEC team playing somebody from outside the league. That makes it very, very, very special. Eight conference games. Of course, Alabama hosts Tennessee, LSU's at Vanderbilt, Oklahoma at South Carolina, Texas A&M at Arkansas, Ole Miss at Georgia, Florida hosts Mississippi State, Kentucky is at home against Texas, and Missouri is at Auburn along with Tennessee at Alabama. All of the point spreads are set, and I will give my point spread predictions in the final segment of the show today. If you want to get involved in the program, the phone number on the Gary Harris Show hotline is 205-342-9904. That's 205-342-9904. And if you want to see the print, the Hey Vols print with Roman Harper forcing that fumble to hold on to the victory or allow Alabama to win that football game, you can see it on my socials, Gary Harris underscore WVUA on Twitter, and also Gary Harris WVUA 23 on Facebook, or my personal page, Gary L. Harris. I've got pictures of the print there that I'm going to be giving away. So it's a huge weekend. Before we go any further, I do need to let you know that this hour of the Gary Harris Show being brought to you, as always, by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it's just a better way of banking. I encourage you to find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union Loans, real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership and join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, the guest lineup for today, Adam Amin, Fox Sports. What a weekend he had last weekend. He called that history-making Mariners-Tigers Game 5 in Seattle on Friday night and then flew across country to Charlotte and called the Carolina Panthers' final play victory over the Dallas Cowboys. He's on the call this week for Eagles-Vikings, another huge game, along with Greg Olson and Pam Oliver. So Adam Amin is going to join us at 9:30. At 10 o'clock, Jeff Spiegel, ABC 3340 sports anchor, will be with us. He was not able to be with us yesterday, so he's going to be with us today at 10. And then at 10:30, the Auburn Report with Brett Pritchard. So we're off and running. I know we got some phone calls. Hold tight. We'll get to you on the other side. Alabama men's basketball last night, 109-105 in the exhibition game over at the Boutwell Auditorium in downtown Birmingham, balling at Boutwell. 109 points. So Alabama scored a lot, gave up a lot, too. Turned it over a lot in the first half. 12 first-half turnovers. LeVaron Filon, who looks like he could be, first-team All-American candidate, 28 points. Aiden Holloway added 20. So good win for the Tide over Florida State, although they've got a lot to clean up. But good start. Also, the Alabama women yesterday at Boutwell beat the Florida State as well. And they won by a much more comfortable margin. So balling at Boutwell, saw Alabama men and women take victories over Florida State. All right, it's 13 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. We're going to take a timeout. And when we come back, we'll get to some phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. And we'll hear from you this morning on what you think about the big game between Alabama and Tennessee tomorrow night. Your score predictions are welcomed as well. Great show on tap. Stay with us. We'll be back, take some phone calls, and then we've got Adam Amin coming up at 9:30. Friday's at the Free. Gary Harris Show. Come on by and see me a little early if you want. Come in that side door and right by the stage, and you can hang out. Again, you can't order anything to eat until 11 o'clock, but the game day menu is in effect, and they're going to start serving up that great game day menu at 11 a.m. Friday's at the Free. Gary Harris live at Industry Hours Pub, 1925 University Boulevard. Get on by and see me. We'll be right back after this.
Here's what's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Friday morning. Another No Kings anti-Trump protest is scheduled for tomorrow at Government Plaza downtown. It will run from 10 a.m. till noon. It's one of 2,000 such protests nationwide on Saturday. The last event drew some 200 participants at the Shelby Federal Building. The No Kings Day of Action is sponsored by Invisible West Alabama. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news and sports coverage all throughout the day. It's free. Don Hartley, Townsquare Media. Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three.
At Tuscaloosa Tractor, Castaway Fish Co., Crimson Pride Hunting and Fishing, Precision Armory, Junction Grocery, Urbans, Military Surplus R Us, and Adams Heating and Cooling.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big-screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside on the beautiful patio. Come by and say hello to Kim and Lisa, the Billy's management dream team. Billy's, good food, good friends, and good time.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm today, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 65. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high of 86. Sunday, cloudy and cooler, a good chance of showers and a few thunderstorms during the morning hours, the high 78. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 70 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
What a feeling. Feel like singing. Tired of working. My mind is buzzing. Feel like dancing. Yes, I do.
Oh, yeah, another thing we do on Friday. Listen to be live and answer our club as we bring it in with that great weekend music. Wet Willie Weekend welcomes us back into the Gary Harris Show. 9:17, glorious morning here in Tuscaloosa, and we're going to take some phone calls. We've got going to lead off with Robbie Glenn, and then we'll get to Bill on the Gary Harris Show hotline. Good morning, Robbie.
Good morning, Gary. Wish I was there with you. You know, enjoying the. I always like to get my Guinness there, but. Having the meat and three, which I know they don't have today, but they still have some great food. So, wish I was sitting with you, but ready for
I do, too.
Right. It's a great night. We got the playoffs in baseball. There were some great games last night. The Dodgers look like they're going to put it away. You got Ohtani going tonight on the mound. I think that'll round it up, you know, round it up for them, and I don't see them beating the Dodgers. Now, the other one is very interesting. Tied it back up 2-2. Man, Seattle's got their work cut out for them now.
Well, I think, you know, let's be honest, it'd be a shock now if the Dodgers don't advance to the World Series. And I'll be honest with you, Robbie, I'll be surprised if they don't win it. Even with Ohtani not swinging a bat right now, what they've been able to do in the postseason is impressive. And this is a team that, you know, they got the highest payroll in baseball. They're built to win a World Series. They won it last year. And they're the clear favorite to win it again, regardless of who comes out of the American League. It's you know, I think most people would pick the Dodgers, and that's who I'm picking. That's who I picked before the playoffs. And if Ohtani starts swinging a bat, I don't know that anybody can handle him. He's really not hitting right now.
No, he's struggling, and he's been taking extra BP. If you saw that, he just – it's a mental thing right now. He's swinging at bad pitches, just not seeing the ball, but he'll figure it out. And they're doing the things right. I mean, Roberts is doing the right thing, that manager – I mean, he's playing small ball when he has to, and that's how he's winning games. They're butting people over, just doing the right things. So, yeah, I agree with you. They're going to win the whole World Series. I don't see anybody touching them. Now, you know, Toronto does have some hot bats, but I just don't think you can stop the Dodgers. And then with also,
what's your thoughts on Bama, Tennessee tomorrow night?
Well, I'm going to the game with my boys. So, tell Snead and Brantley, we're going to come see them first, you know, and get some food at Innisfree. But I think Bama's just playing too good right now. I know Tennessee can score. I just don't see us stopping. And then with getting the news that Jam Miller might be able to play, that's just huge. I know the other backs are good, you know, and they're getting better. But something about having Jam back there, just picking up blocks and getting those extra yards that you need, I just think we need him in the game. And I hope he doesn't come back too soon and with that concussion. But they wouldn't let him play if it was anything dangerous. So. I just think Bama's.
No, listen, somebody texted me last night after the availability report came out and said he was probable, and they texted me and said, I feel like we're rushing him back. And I'm like, it's got nothing to do with that. He has to be cleared by the doctors, and that's all it is. If he's cleared by the doctors, he's good to go. If he's not, he won't play. It's just that simple. So this isn't a situation where, you know, they're rushing him back. If you clear the concussion protocol, that means that you're ready to play in the game. So if that's the case, they'll play. And if so, for some reason, you know, they check him out today or tomorrow and don't feel like he's good to go, then the doctors will say he can't go. So if he plays, it's because he's ready to play.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with Alabama rushing him back. That is totally out of their control. Like you said, that's doctor's call, and that they're not associated with anything with the NCAA. That's their call. So if he clears, then the coaches will put him out there. So I'm ready to see it, but I think Bama's going to pull away and win comfortable, not – you know, like a huge, but I'm thinking of maybe 10 to 14 point win is what I have it. So I think it's going to be exciting. And also, if with everybody in town, you know, don't forget there's a game tonight at the Joe. Go catch the Alabama baseball team playing Lipscomb tonight. So see some of this new talent they got in, plus some of our old veterans. I think this is going to be a really good team this year.
Yeah, it's quite a weekend, and Bama baseball tonight, you're right, fall ball at the Joe. That's a lot of fun, going to be a gorgeous night and a beautiful day. Hey, great to hear from you. What's a quick update for us on Stryker?
He's, you know, still getting up early in the morning. He was up at 2, and then again at 4, he fell asleep for about 30 minutes. But we have his injections Monday, so that will ease some of his pain, and I think he'll start sleeping better. So he's doing okay. I had an appointment, so I had to stay here with him, but he's doing okay. So get these injections.
All right, well, I'll let Steve and Brantley know you're coming by Innisfree tomorrow before you go to the game.
I appreciate it. Roll Tide here.
All right, Robbie, good to hear from you, man. Appreciate that. Let's keep it rolling out on the Gary Harris Show hotline. We got Bill next up. Hey, Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing good. Let's talk about the high school game tonight. What I want to do is it comes down to the, you know, playoffs now. Is anybody's game. Am I correct, Gary?
Yeah, I think you're correct, BT. I think that, and I know you follow ACA, they got a big, big game tonight against Oak Grove. There are a lot of big games tonight, and you're right. It's getting down to the nitty-gritty now, and these teams are, as quick as it gets here, it's nearly over. So they're either playing to get into the playoffs or playing for playoff position and trying to get a number one or two seed so they can host games when we get started here in a couple of weeks. But, yeah, you're right. It's a big high school football weekend. And, you know, I never want to minimize the high school football. In fact, obviously Alabama is what we build everything around in football season. But the high school is on Friday nights. Big, big deal. And I'll have my hour go football Friday, as always, from 10:30 to 11:30 tonight on WVUI 23. So we'll have it covered. But you're absolutely right, BT. It's a big, big night of high school football.
Hey, Gary, if we can take care of business, you know, like running the ball and stuff like that, I mean, take care of what we need to do to win the game, that's what it's going out to.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. Just take care of business, be prepared, you have a good week of preparation, then go out and do what the coaches have trained you to do. And the teams that do that well are usually the teams that come out on top. So, big, big, big week. So, all right, Bill, we'll have fun at the ACA game tonight.
I'll go ask you something. Did you hear about the Tennessee player?
Which Tennessee player?
The defensive lineman.
What happened?
He's not going to be playing tomorrow, is what I heard.
Yeah, they got a few guys out, man. They've got they're hitting the secondary, and so they're you know, like a lot of teams this time of the year, they're having to overcome some injuries, and of course, that's part of it. But thanks for that update, BT. Okay.
Yes, sir, buddy.
All right, brother. Good to hear from you. Always good to hear from Bill Taylor. 9:25 here on the Gary Harris Show. As I said, I got Adam Amin coming up in the next segment. That is going to be so much fun, as Adam is one of the best in the business. We'll talk about that history making weekend. The weekend that he had in Seattle when the Mariners and the Tigers played the longest game in postseason history. And then he flew across country, was in Charlotte on Sunday as Bryce Young led the Panthers to win over the Cowboys. And Charlotte's 3-3. He's got Vikings and Eagles this week. So he's got quite a little role that he's on here as far as play-by-play for Fox Sports. One other note on the Alabama-Tennessee series, because I know a lot of Tennessee fans had to live through 15 straight losses to Nick Saban. But they have been quick to remind, you've probably seen it, Cole, on social media. They've been quick to remind people they've won two of the last three. they've been full speed. But one thing they haven't done is win in Tuscaloosa since 2003.
Was that the four overtime game?
Yeah, that's 22 years ago. So they haven't won in a while. And they are looking to kind of knock that off their bucket list. A lot of Tennessee fans weren't alive the last time they won here in Tuscaloosa. So it's going to be a big game tomorrow night. All right, we're going to take a time out here on the program. Before we do, I do want to mention to you the YMCA of Tuscaloosa, where I work out. I'd love for you to join me over there. It's just a beautiful facility, great staff. Jeff Knox, the CEO, all the personal trainers, they do it right. 2313 Street, downtown Tuscaloosa. The Y is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. We're going to come back with Adam Amin next here on the Gary Harris Show. Saturday night, feeling just right.
championship school, and school is in session.
He'll go on the toss to Jam. He cuts it back. He's got a first down. He's got a touchdown.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide battle Tennessee on the third Saturday in October. Our coverage begins at 3:30 on your home for Alabama football.
Presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Online at Tuscaloosa.
Treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
The flagship station for Alabama Crimson Tide football.
Alabama touchdown.
Only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Live at Industry Irish Pub, 925 University Boulevard. They open at 11, but if you want to slide by a little early like Cole has done, you can hang out with me. Right now we're joined by one of the best in the business, Adam Amin from Fox Sports, who had, I guess if you're a sportscaster, play-by-play sportscaster, Adam, this was a dream weekend. You made history out in Seattle last Friday night, 15 innings, the Mariners 3-2 over the Tigers to win game five of the ALDS. Unbelievable baseball game. Then you flew across country. And you were in Charlotte on Sunday for the call on the Panthers' win over the Cowboys on the final play of the game. And the Panthers get to 3-3. So I know you got a big one this weekend that we'll get to as well with Eagles and Vikings. But what about last weekend, man? That was special.
You said it right, Gary. I think every one of us who ever puts on a headset and wants to do this job in any capacity hopes and wishes and wonders if we'll ever get a game like we had last Friday, let alone a weekend like I was fortunate enough to experience from my position. It's I had a really, really cool phone call, and I'm happy to share this, from Mike Tirico, obviously, you know, voice of Sunday Night Football and the host of the Olympics for NBC. And he called me and said, you have the best job in sports this weekend, because I had that game five and then the Cowboy game on Sunday. And he said this without knowing what the results were going to be, right? He just said, like, how lucky are you? You get to call, you know, an elimination game, a winner-take-all baseball game, and then go call a game for one of the bigger, you know, well-known brands of football team in the country. And then the games happen to be that fun and that good and in the case of the baseball game, historic. So what a fortunate, cool, privileged weekend that was. I'm very, 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 very thankful and fortunate that I got a chance to be a part of that. And then we move on. We called some Bulls preseason basketball last night, and we'll get ready for another fun NFL game this weekend.
Yeah, you don't ever stop. But for last Friday night, it was interesting because I have our high school show. Well, we tie in college too, but Football Friday, 10:30 to 11:30 p.m. So when I get done, I'm usually trying to get out of there and go home. It's been a long day. I got to be back on Saturday, all that. You know how it works. But I get back in the sports office, and all my interns and all the staff is just, they're glued to the TV. And so we're watching Mariners Tigers, and I'm, you know, I'm into it. But at the same time, I'm like, please end. I want to go home. But it was just that, you know, that kind of game. And you know that you're what, you know, of course, I know, again, you're in the moment, you're calling the game, but, and you're staying on top because you want to make, you know, you want to do a good job. But I said, while you're doing it and you're working a game like that, is it still in your mind that, hey, man, this is historic. I'm part of something that they're going to be talking about for years to come.
You know, you try to think about that at some point. It certainly pops up, you know, when you're, you know, we've got a great crew who is there to, you know, contextualize some of the stuff that we're watching. And, you know, you'll see the graphic pop up at some point. I think it was in the 14th inning. It said, you know, this is the longest winner-take-all game in postseason history. And this is, a sport that's been around for about a century and a half almost at this point. So, you know, for those two teams to be battling the way they were, I think Tom Verducci, our incredible reporter, you know, was interviewing Cal Raleigh after the game and said, you know, we've never seen two teams with those stakes play each other for that long. And what was it like to be a part of that game? And I think Cal was kind of flabbergasted the same way a lot of us were. Like, a lot of us just couldn't believe that we had had the chance to be there for that, right? Like, you don't ever predict that something like that's going to happen. It turned into incredible television. It turned into an incredible battle of wills. You know, I know some people are going to say, oh, God, 5 runs and 15 innings. Ugh, that's not fun. That doesn't sound like very fun baseball. But when you see how those runs were scored, when you see the traffic that was on the base paths in those 12th and 13th and 14th innings and the pitches that were made with runners on base, the potential winning runs on base, the double plays that finished off a couple of those innings, it was some of the most thrilling soap opera. You know, it's one of the most thrilling soap operas I've ever been a part of. And I think afterwards we really did feel like that was something special. We witnessed something that is rare and should be appreciated, especially for those of us who still love baseball in whatever form we may love it in. It's hard not to walk away from a night like that and think, man, that was pretty special and historic.
The Mariners get the win, and then they fly across the, you know, to Canada, to Toronto, and you're thinking, well, they're going to be hung over. But they weren't. I mean, they came out and played great, won the first two games in Toronto. So now you're thinking the Mariners have the upper hand. You go back to Seattle. This is one of those weird series. So far, the road team has won every game. Now we're 2-2, best of three. The Blue Jays have the home field advantage back. I don't know if they want it, but really interesting series so far in the American League.
Certainly is. And I think the Toronto pitching after those first couple of games was able to settle down. It's always interesting to see how pitching is going to come out at the beginning of a series after you've already played like a pretty extensive series, in particular for Seattle. I know they're getting a little bit of help with Brian Wu, who's back in their rotation. The Blue Jays had a chance to, you know, reset a little bit, but got, you know, pretty, I think, shell-shocked by how Seattle came out those first couple of games. I think now we kind of, you know, being a 2-2, best of three, it really does feel like a big reset button for both of these teams. I know they'll have a travel day tomorrow. They're playing game 5 tonight. But it feels like a little bit of a reset. And obviously tonight is a huge swing game. You know, the winner of this game typically goes on to win the series when it's tied at 2 apiece. I think home field advantage is kind of reset now at this point since we're sitting at 2-2. I think the Blue Jays are happy to have found their offense again because this is the offense that carried them in the Yankees series. I don't know how long either pitching staff holds up, but I do feel like these offenses are in a good rhythm right now. I think they're seeing it well. And then I'll be curious tonight. I'll be curious to see how the Mariners come out because Josh Naylor got them going, but they couldn't really sustain anything after that. So I think the Blue Jays feel good about where they're at. I think the fact that the road team has won every game is more of an anomaly than anything else. I think it's just been really well-played baseball so far.
In the National League, I hate to count the Brewers out, but I'm counting them out. We've talked about the Dodgers all year. They won it last year. They're built for the postseason, highest payroll in baseball. And unlike the Yankees, which couldn't get out of the divisional series, the Dodgers are in the NLCS. They're up 3-0, and they're doing this without Ohtani hitting. I mean, I picked them to win the World Series before the season. I'm going to stick with that. You know, the Brewers have been great and have had a nice run and terrific regular season, but this so far has looked like a mismatch.
It feels like it. Yeah, I think they've kind of overpowered the Brewers, and Brewers pitching is where they're made. The sum of the Brewers' parts are better than any individual that they might have. And I think when you have a team, when you have an offense in particular that's built that way, and it's what's different about Toronto and Seattle, right? Like, those are two teams that have sluggers. Both of those teams have sluggers. Like, Cal Raleigh is a slugger, bona fide. You know, the Blue Jays have Vlad, a bona fide slugger. George Springer's hit, you know, about as many playoff home runs as any player that's ever played. So the difference when you look at the other series in L.A. and Milwaukee is that Milwaukee doesn't have that one guy or those two guys in the middle of the order where you really go, oh, man, I got to worry about this. And if they do, or if you go into a game plan and think, all right, well, I got to avoid, you know, this pocket or these two guys because they're hitting well right now, they don't have the guy that just puts the fear of baseball into you. Whereas the Dodgers have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, and they've got guys that you have to fear and you have to game plan for. The Brewers are known for things together. Maybe you look at Jackson Churio as that type of player, but a guy who's typically hitting in the leadoff spot who is, you know, who's in for some power this year, but really doing a lot of guys on base. I think that's where the difference is, and that's why I feel like that's been the biggest difference. I don't want to say that that's the defining characteristic of the series, that there's been a lot more that's gone into it. The pitching has been really good, but I do feel like that is a factor where these other teams just have guys that have such lineup length. They create problems for you 1-9. And I don't know if the Brewers have been able to do that on a consistent basis in this series.
I do want to ask you about Ohtani. Not a good time to have a slump. Of course, you know, I mean, his talent is not in question here. You wonder about the two-way status. And what do you think's going on with him?
I mean, I think everybody goes through these types of stretches, you know, during the season. But I do think maybe the focus, you know, on being effective as a pitcher in this postseason is maybe impacting him a little bit. I do also think that teams just run into stretches like this. The Dodgers have done that in years past, right? Like, you know, the years prior where you felt like, hey, they're by far the best team. Why aren't they winning it? Well, they run into a rocky stretch of, you know, 4 or 5 games. I saw it in the Padres series a few years ago in 22. Where just everybody seemed to kind of slow down at the wrong time. And when that happens, it's hard to generate offense. But right now, it's just Ohtani. And these other guys are doing enough to hurt this Milwaukee pitching staff. I wouldn't panic too much about it. I think once you get into the next series, assuming that LA is going to finish this off, I think he'll be just fine. I do feel like that's relatively common. And I do think you have to be careful with him. I'm sure he's not getting as much to hit as he typically would, especially because Milwaukee is very careful with good hitters. I think those are kind of multiple things that contribute to what's going on right now.
Adam Amin with us from Fox Sports. All right, let's get to the second leg of your you know, last weekend when you flew across country to Charlotte and you called the game with Greg Olson and Pam Oliver on Sunday. You had the Cowboys. How about them Cowboys? And they felt like they were about to get on a roll. And you know, Carolina beat them 30-27. Great football game. I watched most of that after you had a tremendous call on the game winner in Seattle. I thought on Sunday you guys were at the top of your game. That was a heck of a football game. And obviously I was tickled to see Bryce Young lead another game-winning drive. But it was a great football game. But if you're the Cowboys and you're trying to kind of, you know, turn the corner and get on a roll, that's one I think they felt like they would go into Charlotte and win, and they didn't.
You know, and listen, that offense is still fine. I'm not too worried about, you know, the offense, right? Even with some of their offensive line shuffling, they looked a little bit more like themselves on Sunday. Dak has been playing great. Dak's played efficient football. He's been thrown at a very high completion rate. George Pickens has had some really good games, even without CeeDee Lamb. Jake Ferguson is on a roll as of late. You know, Javonte Williams has had some good games. Been a nice little revelation with Dallas this year, but at the same time, this is a defense that leaves a lot to be desired. And not having Micah Parsons really does impact how they get to the quarterback. They finally did it a little bit against the Jets a couple of weeks ago, but that's not a very good football team in my estimation of the New York Jets. I don't think a lot of people look at them and think that's a very good football team. So, you know, to do it against New York's one thing, but to not be able to get to the pass, to the quarterback, not get the pass rush there against Bryce Young, who had a fairly clean day. He had time to make decisions, even when he was hurried. You know, I thought the plays that Bryce made against that defense, again, you can say what you want about the defense, but I thought Bryce made some really good plays. There was this great 4th-and-3 call, the plus 40-yard line right around the 2-minute warning, where, you know, they run a quick pressure. Dallas brings an extra body. They kind of go zero at that point. And Bryce Young knows, I've got one guy. I'm throwing Renfro. I saw the safety playing off of him. I'm going to make that decision right now, and I'm going to live with that decision. And if that's the one that gets me the first down, great. If that's the one that turns the ball over, okay, fine. We made the decision, and he was very decisive. He found Hunter Renfro, and then they could milk the clock the rest of the way and lead to the game-winning field goal. Dallas has a lot of defensive problems. Bryce Young and the Panthers are getting a little better each week. I'll see them again next week when they host another good team. They're going to have Panthers have a brutal schedule. They're playing Buffalo next week. So I'll see them against the Bills in Charlotte one more time. But, man, I am really happy to see Bryce is starting to get some traction. production on offense. I know he's had to win a lot of games in the final 2 minutes, but he's these have been nice little learning experiences for Bryce, man. All these game-winning drives, I think he's got three of them now in his career, or something along those lines. Maybe it's six now. I forget the number, but most of his wins, I think it's like 6 out of 9 or 7 out of 9, something like that, have been on a game-winning drive. So he's getting used to these tight situations, and I think the trust factor between him and his coach, Dave Canales, is starting to grow and grow. And that's a very, very, very good sign for Bruce.
And you pointed it out on the telecast, that 4th and 4, you're right. He pre-snap determined he was going to throw to Renfro the slant, but that was a small window. I mean, he zipped that ball in there, and Hunter did a nice job of catching it, but that was not an easy throw. There were a couple defenders there, could have got a hand on that ball, and he hit it, threw it low and executed it perfectly.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the decisiveness, right? Like, we're getting to the point now where Bryce Young looks like a decisive NFL quarterback. And again, a lot of that, and I asked him before the game, a lot of that is just reps. A lot of that is just opportunity. A lot of that is just time on task. A lot of that is comfort with your receivers. A lot of that is, hey, Tedero McMillan is finally getting into the end zone a little bit. He found him twice on Sunday. So there's a lot of positive things that are taking place. Again, some of it may just be time. You know, I think we have an assumption about NFL quarterbacks, like when you're a number one pick and you get thrust into the role, like, all right, kid, go. And yeah, some guys have had success. Some guys have had very early success, but most guys don't. It's a hard thing to jump into an NFL offense as the number one pick, more than likely for a team that's not particularly good around you. And I should say, too, Glenn has done a really good job of building the offense the last couple of years. They have a very highly paid offensive line, which is banged up right now. So to their credit, they've shown some depth at those positions. They've drafted two receivers in the first round the last 2 years in Leggett and McMillan this past year. They paid Rico Dowdle to come in from Dallas and be a backup, and he stepped up really nicely in the absence of Chuba Hubbard. So, credit to the front office there too, but I think a lot of this is just time, reps, and better personnel and more trust with your coach. I think a lot of elements have to play into the success.
And you got a great game to call on Sunday at noon on Fox. Eagles at Vikings, and this is a huge game, two good teams. I want to ask you first about the Eagles, because they started 4-0. They've lost 2 in a row. They let that game against the Broncos get away from them, and then just got, they just got whipped by the Giants their last time out. And you know how it happens with championship teams and that kind of talent. And, guys start chirping, and A.J. Brown is not shy or bashful about making his feelings known. He's always been that way. He's not necessarily happy. Jalen, as we've talked about before, all he's interested in doing is winning the game. But now they've lost 2 in a row. And there seems to be a lot going on with that team. As you prepare for the game, where are the Eagles at right now?
Yeah, it's been rough to watch. I do think there is a little bit of a hangover. I think it's been a lot of snaps over the last calendar year. I do think that teams that have to that win a Super Bowl have to muscle through some of the quote unquote hangover stuff, whether it's the extra snaps, whether it's the banquets and all that during the off season. But I think it starts with the offensive line. Like, this has been one of the great offensive lines in the NFL for the last 5 years. And I think one injury in particular, the Landon Dickerson injury, has really affected them. I think he was back at practice this week, but at left guard, he does a lot of work to help out Jordan Mailata, who's one of the better left tackles in the league. And, the pass rush is starting to get to this offensive line a little bit more than maybe we've seen it in years past. Saquon Barkley's getting hit behind the line way more often this year than maybe he ever did last year during his incredible 2,000-yard season. So I think it starts there. Jalen's doing a good job. Like, he's not turning the ball over. It's not particularly exciting at times, because they are a little, it can be a little monotonous, just the way they operate their offense, short and intermediate passes, doing a lot of, similar runs. I think Lane Johnson, the veteran right tackle, actually said this team's getting a little bit predictable on the offensive end. So when you're predictable, that's going to hurt you. When teams can tell you what your tendencies are, that's going to hurt you. But I feel like there's still a long way to go in this season. There's way too much talent. I still think that's probably the, if not one of the four most talented teams just personnel-wise in the league. They're certainly in the top six or seven. I don't think it's going to be a problem that's going to plague them for a very long time. But if you ask people in Philadelphia, as I have over the course of the last couple of days, they think the sky is falling.
Last night, we saw Joe Flacco do it again. I mean, this guy, and we had, of course, Aaron Rodgers on the other side. So we know now that with the way he officiated, quarterbacks can play a lot longer. But you had two 40-year-old quarterbacks going at it. Flacco gets traded by the Browns to the Bengals, and all of a sudden he looked like Pronto Flacco again last night and led the Bengals to a game they really needed over the Steelers, 33-31. Interesting. I mean, I really thought the Steelers had a chance to put a early stranglehold on that division, and instead they get beat.
That's the North, right? That's been the AFC North the last several years, right? That's part of the reason it's been as entertaining to watch it as it has been. But that was different. You know, Flacco against Rodgers, that was pretty cool. I think that was the first time since, like, 2009, if I'm not mistaken, that they had squared off. I don't know if I read that correctly. But it was definitely only, the third time that a couple of 40-year-old quarterbacks had ever played against each other in the league. We had Brady and Breeze a couple times a few years back, and now Flacco against Rodgers, two venerable, experienced guys with a lot of success in this league, and pretty cool to watch Joe kind of turn back the clock a little bit. And listen, Mike Tomlin said it. Like, why would you trade Joe Flacco if you're Cleveland within the division to a team that needs him? You're helping out your division, you know, one of your division rivals. He didn't really understand that, and then he had to go and play him, and he goes, see, you know, like, this is what I was talking about. I thought it was a wonderfully, wonderfully played offensive game. I really enjoyed that final drive. Great play by T. Higgins, right? Like, this is smart. Like, I know the time and scoring situation. And that was a cool thing. He knows that defense. You know, I know Mike Tomlin has done a really good job of changing defenses over the years and mixing it up. But, you know, that's still a Tomlin, Terrell Austin defense. Joe Flacco knows it about as well as anybody. And he looked pretty sharp, I thought, against that defense that he's pretty familiar with last night. You're right, Gary. That's such a big win for Cincinnati as they try to stem the tide of the injury to Joe Burrow and try to, you know, plug that gap. Joe Flacco is more than capable, and certainly the experience is something that team needs right now. It was very enjoyable to watch Joe Flacco play the way he played, and Rodgers too. It was a well played offensive football game last night.
All right, Adam, final 30 seconds. I was going to ask you about parity, but everybody knows it's here. We saw the Bills get handled in Atlanta on Monday night. You know, 5 weeks in, we didn't have any unbeaten teams. But I want to ask you about the Ravens just quickly. Can they get it turned around? I mean, when Lamar comes back, is there enough football left for this team to still make the playoffs? Because, I mean, they look like they've got a lot more issues than just Lamar being out. I mean, that defense has been bad. They can't get – well, they got Henry going a little bit last week, but this does not look like a Super Bowl caliber team, much less a playoff team to be right now. What do you think is the key for the Ravens to get it back on track?
Yeah, I think having Lamar back changes a lot of things because it changes how possession-based your offense becomes. It changes how much of a cushion your defense gets to be able to rush the passer a little bit more aggressively. Like, all these things, you know, are domino effects. Everything plays into everything else, so having Lamar back is going to help out a lot of things for them. But, yeah, you're right. They still have to shore up their pass rush. They have to shore up what they've done in the back end. They're not getting takeaways at the rate that we're used to seeing this Baltimore team get takeaways. So I think a lot of things will be helped by Lamar, but he's not a cover-up solution for everything that they've got going.
Hey, Adam, great job, man. I appreciate the time. Keep it going. You're one of the best in the business. Looking forward to Eagles-Vikings on Sunday. Thanks a lot.
You got it, Gary.
All right, 9:54, we'll break away and come back and wrap up hour number one. Friday's at the Free. We'll be right back after this.
Coming up. job.
On the game with Ryan Fowler.
And coming up on the Friday edition of the game, hours away from Alabama and Tennessee, we're going to do it with SEC Parlay Pick Contest presented by Brian Hart Construction. We're going to give away a gigantic tailgating package courtesy of our great sponsor, Piggly Wiggly. We'll talk with Brent Beard. We'll also talk with Lee Sterling, and we'll take your phone call starting at 2 p.m. here on the game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa.
And great drink specials, making it a great spot to catch the game or enjoy a night out with friends. Grandstand, located on 4th Street and Temerson Square, downtown.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans.
Dragon Reel, Cypress Supply, Banks and Company Hardware, Stephen Fights Allstate, B&B Transmission, Primetime Men's Clinic, South's Finest Roofing, and Cajun Bistro.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show.
Goal line in, touchdown, Alabama.
On your home for Alabama sports.
Tide 100.9.
And streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 9:58, Gary Harris, live at Innisfree Irish Pub. Cole has come by. Sherry just stopped by. Sherry won a print a couple weeks ago that I got to give her. So if you want to slide by a little bit early, you can. At 11 o'clock, they do open for business. As I said earlier, no Lucky Lunch Meat and Free because it's a home game weekend, but they do have the game day weekend menu available beginning at 11 a.m. All right, this hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. We're going to come back with the second hour. Jeff Spiegel will get us started off in hour number two. Plus, Brett Pritchard with the Auburn Report. Our Bama football trivia giveaway. We're going to give away that Hey Balls print by Greg Gamble. Artist numbered and signed and hand-signed by Roman Harper, who forced that big fumble in 2005. So another hour of the Gary Harris Show is coming up. Ministry Irish Pub, 1925 University Boulevard. We'll be right back with hour number two.
And W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports studios in Los Angeles. Bolaños.
Thursday night football between the Bengals and the Steelers went down to the wire, but Cincinnati won it on a 36-yard field goal to come out on top 33-31, and the Unks delivered as Joe Flacco threw for 342 yards and three touchdowns. One of them went to Ja'Marr Chase, who also had 16 catches for 161 yards, and Aaron Rodgers threw for 249 yards, four touchdowns. He also had two interceptions. Pittsburgh falls to 4-2, and Cincinnati improves to 3-4. In baseball, the Dodgers are one win away from advancing to the World Series after topping the Brewers 3-1. Game 4 is on Friday at 8:30 Eastern Time, while the Blue Jays have evened the series in the ALCS after
the Tuscaloosa and Premier Service Company, an event by the Chamber of Commerce of West Alabama. Celebrate local shop the halls November 19th at Bryant Conference Center.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for The Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Friday's at the Free Live at Industry Irish Pub, 1925 University Boulevard, hour number two. And still to come at 10:30, our Bama football trivia giveaway, courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery, University Mall. We're going to give away that Hey Balls print, hand-signed by the artist and numbered by Greg Gamble, also hand-signed by Roman Harper, who made the big hit Cole's come by to visit with us. Jerry came by. She won a print a couple of weeks ago, so she's got her print. If you come by a little bit early and want to hang out, I've got some dinner for two. Gift cards from Texas Roadhouse to give away. So get on by, and we'll give you one of those as well. Again, they don't start serving food until 11, but I'm here and ready to go. All right, let's jump out on the Gary Harris Show. Hi, welcome in my pal Jeff Spiegel, longtime sports anchor, ABC 3340 in Birmingham. Not able to be with us yesterday, so we moved him until held on to him until today, and now he is ready to go. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Hey, Gary. How you doing, man?
Doing great, man. It's a big football Friday, and, of course, obviously tomorrow. And tomorrow night, we've got college football. Let's begin right there with Alabama and Tennessee. Bama won 15 in a row until 2022 when the Vols had that incredible win up in Knoxville. Now they've won two of the last three, as they've been quick to point out to Alabama fans on social media. But they haven't won here since that five overtime game in 2003. So 22 years since they've had a win over Alabama. And now they're going to try to mark that off for tomorrow night when they play the Tide here in Tuscaloosa.
Was that the Casey Clawson year?
Yeah, it was. It was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a great game that was. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's a very special rivalry. I think you got two teams that are playing really well. I mean, I love the two quarterbacks. I love the way Aguilar is playing. You know, an explosive offense, you know, on their part. Yeah, it could be one of those games that turns into, you know, a big shootout. And whoever's got the ball last wins. And I think there's a lot of pressure on the Alabama defense to kind of, you know, contain these receivers in that passing game. But, you know, you look on the other side, and the Tennessee defense, which has not been great at pass defense this year, has the same bit of urgency on their side as well.
Yeah, when you look at this game tomorrow night, you mentioned the defenses, because Tennessee's defense has not been very good this year. They lead the nation in scoring offensively. Aguilar's been great. They're explosive. But I want to ask you about the fact that Tennessee scores a lot of points, but they've scored fast. They've not been a ball possession team, so their defense has been out there a lot. Do you think they might try to play a little differently tomorrow night, maybe try to possess the football, keep their defense off the field, or they'll just play the way they play on offense?
You know, I don't know. You know, when you're this far into the season, you are who you are. You know, and I think you gotta be who you are, and you just gotta go with it. So, you know, if the defense, if their tongues are lagging or sagging or whatever, you know, they gotta just suck it up, man. Because, you know, it's the third Saturday in October, and you know there are certain games on the schedule. You know, and Nick Saban has said this before, that you're remembered for. And if you're a Tennessee guy, or an Alabama guy, this is a game that you're going to be remembered for a while. Go with what's brung you so far, and you roll with it. You there?
Jeff, you still with me?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought I lost you there for a second. I'm over here at Innisfree. I'm having a hard time hearing you right now. But so I lost you for just a second. I think you're Cole's got the app on out there. I can still hear you talking on the app. So there's a little bit of a delay. But just kind of pick back up where you were, because I lost you for a minute.
No. I was just going to say that, Tennessee's going to do what they've done. This far into the year, you are who you are. And you go with the approach that you've taken the whole year. I mean, it's kind of too late to change right now. You just go with what's brought you this far and roll with it.
Exactly. All right, so who do you like tomorrow night?
I like Alabama. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it could be one of those that rides up being like 38-31 or, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. I'm terrible at picking these scores, but I got the Alabama-Missouri game pretty close to right. But I think this could be a lot of points, and this is a great primetime game, just perfect, you know, to put on our network.
Oh, absolutely. We'll talk more about that in a moment. You're set up well again for EOG game wrap, that's for sure. Hey, is it the last stand down on the Plains? And the reason I say that is, even after the 0-2 start in the league, Auburn fans talk to you, and rightfully so. They lost two good teams on the road.
They felt like they were going to come home. They were all in last week. I mean, incredible atmosphere. Cam Newton there having his jersey retired. And they were dominating the first half. It was 10-0. They looked like they were about to go up 17-0. And then the play happened. It was ruled a fumble with Jackson Arnold trying to reach the ball out over the goal line. And Georgia gets the ball after a 37-minute delay and goes down and kicks a field goal. And then in the second half, absolutely dominated Auburn and wound up winning that game 20-10. Now they're 0-3. They got a good Missouri team coming in. Auburn's actually an underdog. It just kind of feels like if they don't win this game, this thing could go off the tracks. How do you see it?
Yeah, it really could. And he didn't exactly get a great vote of confidence from John Cohen earlier in the week. And, very shaky. And there's not going to be as much electricity in the building, certainly, as there was last week. In fact, I mean, we've seen all this play out before. You've been doing this long time. There could be a case where some Auburn fans can show up for the game, you know, as kind of, you know, making a statement, you know, to the administration. But, I still see them beating Missouri. I don't know. Auburn's usually the one to pull the plug on coaches quickly, but this is a different day and time. I mean, we've seen it many, many times across the country, you know, that coaches aren't hearing more. So it could be another Black Sunday, not only for Hugh Freeze, but, you know, some other coaches out there too.
Yeah, that's a big part of where we're at now with college football. And since you brought it up, what do you make of this firing coaches now 4 or 5 games into the season? Used to, that happened very rarely. Most of the time, coach firings happened after the season. But we're seeing now ADs and university presidents and boosters willing to pull the plug on coaches quickly, including successful coaches. Say what you want about James Franklin, but he had been a successful coach at Penn State. What do you make of this new era? Hey, we're going to fire the guy just a few weeks into the season.
Well, this is part of the NIL thing. I mean, there's a payroll now. Teams are spending even more money on football than they were before. And so if the coach is not delivering, then the administration makes a statement to the people who may be interested in coming to this school that, you know, we're making a move. We're making a change. And we're not waiting until the end of the year. You know, we're making a change. So it's really, the more and more you look at college football, the more and more it's looking like the National Football League.
Yeah, it really is. Speaking of coach firings, Trent Dilfer out at UAB. Alex Mortensen is the interim. You had kind of said, Jeff, you thought this was coming for a while. It's kind of amazing probably that they didn't pull the trigger after last season. But where's UAB at? Is there any chance that Mortensen will be considered for the full-time job if he does well? If not, you know, where do you think they go for a coach? I mean, they don't have the budget that some of these schools do. So right now, UAB looks like it's in a pickle.
Well, I think Mortensen has the advantage over any other guys who may be interested in that job, is that he's interviewing every week. He's interviewing every day, you know, in terms of how he runs this program. I mean, this is big for him Saturday. You know, the arch rival is coming to town. You know, it's the battle for the bones, UAB, Memphis. And so if he comes out and the team performs and they respond, and I'll tell you this, Johnny Condo was at the football operations building, you know, for the press conference on Monday. And he just got like a whole different vibe. I mean, it was really positive. People were upbeat. You know, there were no heads down or anything like that. In fact, you know, there was a ray of optimism that, you know, things are going to get better. So, you know, if Alex can turn this thing around and get 2 or 3 wins here down the stretch, then, you know, he's put himself in good position to get this job.
So Johnny was saying that just, because, I mean, Trent Dilfer seems like a likable guy. I don't know him. But you're saying that the building just seemed like it was relieved that this change had been made?
Well, I think so, because there's just been a cloud, you know, activity, you know, over there. And as much as Trent wanted to, you know, spin it positively, the results weren't showing up on the field. So, you know, Johnny picked up on that, you know, it wasn't more positive vibe. And you can feel that, you know, when you walk into a building, you can feel whether people want to be at their jobs or not. kind of a sense, you know, that he got just.
Speaking of the new world of college football, Jeff, when you look at Auburn and underdog at home in Missouri, but the one that really kind of, I think, is an exclamation point as to where we're at, Vanderbilt is favored over LSU. And in what world do we live in that we ever thought we'd see Vanderbilt favor LSU? In fact, I read last night, it's the first time Vanderbilt's been a favorite in an SEC game since 1978. But they're 2.5-point favorite at home tomorrow against LSU.
Good gracious. That is amazing. Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to lay money down on that. I don't lay money down on football anyway, but I see it. I mean, I think Vanderbilt is kind of trending up, and LSU, there was a lot of optimism when the year started, but that's kind of waned a little bit. I think that's a reflection, you know, on the energy that Clark Lee and Diego Pavia and all those transfers have brought to that program. This is a legitimate SEC football program now. And, I mean, good for them. I may think they deserve that title of being a favorite this week.
Jeff, high school football is winding down, believe it or not. And we got a big one tonight with Hoover and Thompson. I mean, clearly on paper, Hoover's the favorite here. I mean, Thompson's a favorite, but Hoover beat them last year in the regular season. And this has kind of become the rivalry in the state of Alabama. How do you see this matchup playing out tonight?
Well, I see it pretty even. I mean, I think it's going to be another terrific football game. They've split the last four meetings. You know, Thompson can nail down the region championship with a win. Hoover's fighting for their playoff lives. I mean, put themselves behind the ball with losses to Hillcrest and Hugh Trustful earlier in the year. So I talked to Chip English on Monday, and he said, we're in playoff mode. I mean, you know, we're in a must-win situation here. But here's the thing about the Hoover program. You know, while there's a sense of urgency, there's no sense of panic. And there's no sense of awe, you know, when they go into the Thompson game. Thompson may intimidate a lot of teams. Gary, they have outscored teams in their region 235-25. They have killed it.
It's hard doing this without equipment.
Yeah, but Hoover's not intimidated. Hoover's fearless, so they're going to go in there and lay it on the line. And so it could be one of those that, you know, comes down to the last play again.
Jeff, great stuff as always, man. As we talked about at the top, EOG Rap is a must-see TV now with the college schedule that ABC 3340 has. And this Saturday night, you got Alabama and Tennessee as your lead-in. So not bad.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And then Auburn and Missouri are at 6:45. So, you know, we'll have, you know, both those press conferences. We'll be bouncing back and forth. You know, I'll be a traffic cop there in the studio, kind of going back and forth between the newsers. And it should be a very intriguing, compelling night of football and pretty dramatic.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Gary.
All right, Jeff Spiegel, ABC 3340. 17 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, Fridays at 3. And I'm not on full equipment this week, so I was straining to hear Jeff there a little bit. But we've got all the chairs now have been placed on the floor, so it's a little quieter. So we're going to get through it here. But when we come back on the other side, listen, Corey, we'll get to you on the Gary Harris Show hotline if you want to call in and get involved in the program. 205-342-9904 is the number. Fridays at the Free continue from Industry Hours Pub on the Gary Harris Show.
West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the TuscaloosaThread.com headlines brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa. Most of West Alabama from Tuscaloosa southward and covering Marengo County is in extreme drought. ABC 3340 Chief Meteorologist James Spann tells us there is rain in the forecast.
The bulk of this will be around midnight tomorrow night until early Sunday afternoon.
That means the Bama rain and the Talladega race should avoid significant rainfall. Another No Kings anti-Trump protest is scheduled for tomorrow at Government Plaza downtown between 10 and noon. And State School Superintendent Dr. Eric Mackey says state schools are down 5,000 students. Don't buy your new or pre-owned Mercedes-Benz from anywhere other than the Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa. Our local team provides a five-star buying experience and five-star service. Over 100 new vehicles, 31 pre-owned, are in stock. Shop local. MercedesOfTuscaloosa.com or come see us at 3200 Skyline Boulevard East, Tuscaloosa. I'm Don Hartley.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after
the game. The Tide Postgame Show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm today, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 65. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high of 86. Sunday, cloudy and cooler, a good chance of showers and a few thunderstorms during the morning hours, the high 78. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 75 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Tide 100.9. For more coverage of Alabama football, visit us at Tide100.9.com or download the free Tide 100.9 app.
The Crimson Tide will not be denied.
It's all over. There's no play with the boss on my back. He don't give me any slack. I sit down.
Look out, weekend. Debbie Dad brings us back into the Gary Harris Show live at NS3 Irish Pub, 1925 University Boulevard. As I said earlier, they open at 11, but a couple folks have already slid by. I've got some Texas Roadhouse Dinner for Two gift cards to give out. Come by a little bit early. I'll hook you up with that. Boy, that's some good food. Also coming up in the next segment, Brett Pritchard with the Auburn Report, but also our Bama football trivia contest as well. Right now, we got some phone calls to get to. We're going to get to Larry, and then we'll talk with Corey on the Gary Harris Show Hotline. Larry's first up. Good morning, Larry.
Gary, good morning. I want to talk about Kiss and Ace Frehley real quick since it's Free For All Friday. I know you're a Kiss fan. When somebody dies untimely like that, first thing you remember where you may have seen them in concert or run across this and that. And I was gifted, blessed to have seen them at the Omni in 1975 in Atlanta. I was up in Atlanta then and had done some sessions and some demos, and Bill Lowry had tickets, the Bill Lowry booking agency. And he said, man, you want to go see Kiss, you got to catch these guys. They're the next big thing. Well, they were already getting big. Dress to Kill, it was a Dress to Kill tour, if I remember right. So we go see Kiss. Me and a couple of the guys, and the band that opened was Rush. Unheard of then. Yeah, and that's what was so unique. They were just taken in America playing, opening act. And it was Leslie West. He had left Mountain. And I remember very well the next day, Peaches Records, Kiss put their handprints on the sidewalk. And I always wondered what happened, who ended up with the sidewalk. But anyway, because, all the record stores went down, sadly. But anyway, I thought I'd share that. And I thought that was real. The way what I've read about it was quite freaky. He just fell in the studio. And
yeah.
A brain bleed, pretty much. I mean, and I'm 72, he was 74, and I caution everybody, when you get a certain age, be careful, man, because I'm going to tell you, you can fall. I've lost two friends from falling, breaking hips, and they just never recovered and ended up dying. You just have to be careful, man, and not be macho and say, I can't do that. I don't get on ladders.
Well, Ace Frehley was a guitar legend, and the one thing I liked about Ace, and again, I'm not a guitar player, but I enjoy him. He knew what he wanted to play and how he wanted to play it, and he was straightforward, and he can make that Gibson Les Paul scream. I know that. So thanks for calling in and pointing that out, Larry. And he'll be missed.
I knew you were, you know, we do a music thing sometimes when I call it on Friday, but I wanted to say I've got Bama winning 45-28.
All right, sounds good. I got a 45-31, so I hope we're right, Larry. Hey, thank you, Larry. Good to hear from you as always. All right, let's get to Corey from Trustful here on the Gary Harris Show Hotline before we have to get the break. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Gary. How are you this morning?
Doing well.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Alabama game. Hoping we can get off to a good start and go from there. But going to high school football here, disappointed that Hewitt lost to Prattville. And Hewitt's kind of got a quarterback problem now because, as you know, the original starter, Zach Benedict, broke his collarbone. And then he returned for the Thompson game and looked rusty. But last week, when Jack Floyd was playing, they were shuffling quarterbacks, and Jack Floyd broke his pinky, and now he's out for the remainder of the season. And so now, with Zach Benedict returning, he's still rusty and don't look good. So now, Hewitt's kind of screwed at quarterback now going forward.
Yeah, they've fallen off quickly. You know, we were sitting here, you and I were sitting here talking about them beating Thompson, and then even after that, being in good shape for that 2 seed, and now all of a sudden they've lost a couple in a row and got quarterback issues. But, you know, you're trying to get into the playoffs, and they should be able to do that, and you never know once you get in. And, then, of course, Hillcrest beats Prattville tonight, and then Oak Mountain next week, they can get that 4th spot in 7A Region 3. So I'm hopeful that Hillcrest can get in. That would be really, really good for them. But yeah, Hewitt, yeah, it's not too late. You never know, Corey. They could get it back together here in the postseason.
From a talent standpoint, they should these last two games. But with the quarterback situation, you just don't know how it's going to play out because the second string quarterback, Jack Floyd, is the more athletic quarterback, but the original starter is more pocket passer. But he can't be who he is because of the collarbone injury, and he's not been the same since. So the off end, plus we got 2 freshman offensive linemen starting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just everything's all screwed up right now, and it's just a mess. But as far as Alabama goes, I'm just looking for a clean game, a good, fast offensive start, and getting a dominant win because keep the streak alive in Bryant Denny, and I'm glad now that Jam Miller is getting better, and we sure could use him. And I got us rolling tomorrow.
What's the score, Corey?
I got it 42-28. I think, like I said, just get off to a fast start and not let them get comfortable.
All right, buddy. Well, great call. Listen, man, good to hear from you. I got to get to this break, but thank you, my friend.
Good talk to you here. Roll Tide.
All right, Corey. 10:29. We're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back with Brett Pritchard for the Auburn Report. Also, Bama football trivia. I'll give you the question. We'll qualify folks during the entire segment. And then later on in the show, we'll announce the winner. We'll be right back after this.
Action today and get up to 30% off. That's leaffilter.com/country for up to 30% off. Leaffilter.com/country. See representative for warranty details.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:33. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. Friday's at the Free. I'm live at Innisfree Irish Pub, and they open the doors at 11 a.m. If you want to come by and enjoy the game day menu of great food selections for this Alabama-Tennessee game. Okay, this is the segment every week where we interview my buddy Brett Pritchard for the Auburn Report, but we also do the Bama Football Trivia Contest, and I'm going to go ahead and give you the question. Since we're going to give away the Hey Vols print signed by Roman Harper and the artist Greg Gamble, I'm going to make this trivia question built around the 2005 game. Last year, I did it too. We gave away this a similar print, and I asked who was the Tennessee fullback that he dislodged the football from. We're going to make it a little easier this year. The question now, I could have made it about the Tennessee starting quarterback. I think that would have been tough. How many people remember Eric Ainge was the starter for Tennessee in 2005? Alabama won that game, of course, 6-3 to keep their, at the time, perfect record intact. My question is, who was Alabama's starting quarterback in the 2005 Alabama-Tennessee game? Who was the Crimson Tide starting quarterback in that 6-3 win? Call 205-342-9904, 205-342-9904. This is not a hard question, so we should. I think last week we had 24 qualifiers. We'll qualify you during the entire segment while I'm interviewing Brett, and also I'll check the app and social media. But who was the starting quarterback for Alabama in 2005 when the Tide beat Tennessee 6-3 at then Bryant-Denny Stadium, now Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium? All right, let's get my pal Brett Pritchard on here for the Auburn Report. Brett, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Gary. How are you, buddy?
Doing great, man. I know this is probably getting old for you, like a broken record. You come on here every week and we talk about how Auburn could have won, but didn't. And there seems to always be some officiating issues going on. But last week, another, you know, at home, woulda, coulda, shoulda game. Auburn was in control of that game. Heck, I know you know better than I do. 10-0, about to go up 17-0. The reach out by Jackson Arnold, root a fumble. Auburn gives up the ball. Georgia drives down, kicks a field goal. And in the second half, Georgia just absolutely dominated the game, and Auburn loses 20-10.
Yeah, you summed it up. I mean, that's really how it went. And, you know, I said this a bunch the last several weeks, and, you know, it happened again on Saturday. Like, this Auburn football team waits for something bad to happen. It's like they are sitting there expecting something bad to happen. You're in full control of the game. You're about to go up, like you said, Gary, 17-0, and you have a controversial call. You know, it was a coin flip. I mean, they slowed it down. They looked at it. You know, when you look at the rules of football, all the football has to do is touch the front part of the plane. They ruled a fumble on the field. So that's why I think they stick with what they stuck with. But, you know, they kind of screwed Georgia there too, because if it was a fumble, they should have been able to pick it up and run it back, which he did.
Yeah.
Regardless, Georgia got the ball on the 1 yard line, and with that, they stole all the momentum, and they were able to get down the field and kick a field goal to get the points before halftime, and Auburn just couldn't recover. I mean, they came out in the second half, and, you know, here's the problem, Gary, and it's what I brought up on the show this week, is that you're still 10-3. Your defense comes out, forces Georgia off the field. You get the ball in good field position. If Georgia went for it and didn't get it, you get the ball in good field position, you're set to drive down half the field and score and be up 17-3 like you would have been anyway probably at halftime. But, you know, this team just doesn't have resolve, it feels like, to be able to step up, even though they've had something bad happen, and go, look, we're still at home, our crowd's in it, we got everything going for us, we got to put this behind us. You know, and to me, that's a reflection of your leadership. It's a reflection of coaching. You know, you got to be able to tell your team, and you got to be able to enforce into your team that, hey, we got to let this go. You know, that's in the past. There's nothing we can do about it. Yes, we feel like we got hosed, but, you know, we got a half of football left to prove to everybody we win this game anyway. And, you know, the offense goes from 237 yards of offense in the first half to 40 in the second. And that, to me, that's just completely inexcusable. I mean, you go from 15 first downs to 3 in the second half. And that was the question I had for Coach Freeze in the post-game press conference. I asked him directly. I said, Coach, what did they do so differently in the second half than the first half that really just collapsed this offense? He said basically his only explanation was they stopped the run and they closed the gaps in the zones. And so, I mean, obviously didn't have anything for an adjustment there coming out of the locker room, and it showed.
Yeah, you did a great job of summing that up, because I'm with you. I mean, yeah, that to say that call didn't impact the game would be stupid. It did impact the game. At the same time, Auburn still up 10-3 at half and came out in the second half and laid an egg. And as you said, you were very straightforward with Hugh Freeze. But how much – I mean, obviously the players and the assistant coaches all play a part, but how much do you put this on how much of this is on the head coach, this inability to deal with adversity and things that happen in a football game and maintain your composure and play well after something goes against you. It just seems like Auburn, as you said, doesn't have that ability. How much of that do you put on Freeze?
It's a direct reflection of your head coach. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, your team plays as the coaching staff coaches and the mood of the coaches. And, you know, they were emotional. Look, and I don't blame them. They were upset at halftime. It felt like, here we go again. And, you know, they carried that into the locker room. And I'm assuming that it was discussed probably more than anything, maybe rather than trying to get your thoughts about you to get out there and play another half of football. It probably was one of those situations where they dwelled on that and it rubbed off on the team. And, you know, Keldrick Falk even said something too in the postgame. He felt like, you know, that was a situation where it killed the momentum. And, you know, you cannot let one call destroy your entire momentum in a game. And again, you're at home, you're retiring Cam Newton's jersey. There's a lot of momentum in that stadium. There's a lot of, I mean, there's just a lot of electricity. And if you can't build and play off of that, then I don't know what you can. And again, nobody wants to have a call go against them, but you gotta make your own break sometimes. You know, we said this in the podcast this week. If you want to make sure it doesn't go to the monitor, don't fumble the ball. You know, make sure you have extra ball security down there. You're diving across the goal line. You know they're going to be punching for the ball. You got to do everything in your power to eliminate that possibility of going to a monitor and having an official determine whether you fumbled it or not. So it's the little things, too. It's the execution. And Coach Freeze talked about that yesterday after practice. He said, look, we've put the team this week in more, crucial situation type settings to see how they react and all that. And to me, you're like 7 weeks into a season, and, you know, why are you doing that at this point? Have you not been doing that the whole time? Have you not been practicing fourth and ones and plays that you know you got in your back pocket if you need to keep the chains moving? So it's just, to me, Gary, to start this question that you just asked me, yes, it goes directly back to the head football coach, and it's no different than any program. Your team plays is a direct reflection of how your team is coached.
Brad Pritchard with us from the Auburn Blitz with the Auburn Report. All right, Freeze said on the press conference, hey, you know, I just go back to work and prepare to win a football game. And, you know, he's right. Auburn gets another home game tomorrow night against Mizzou. I guess it kind of speaks to where we're at. Missouri's favored in this game by a point and a half. I still looks weird to me. But is this last stand for Auburn? I mean, I know there's more football after this, but if you fall to 0-4 with another home loss, it feels like the wheels might come off of this thing. So kind of handicap this matchup for us tomorrow night. And you know, what do you think of Auburn's chances of finally putting it together and posting an SEC win?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same song, different verse every week, Gary. I mean, you go in feeling like, hey, this is a winnable game. I said it this morning on the podcast that when we were predicting the schedule outcomes this year, we all kind of fell in the 8-4, 9-3 range. And this was definitely a game that everybody that, you know, that's been on our podcast and talked to put a check mark in the win column for Auburn. I'm not sure that's the case anymore 6 games into the season. I mean, you're looking at this Missouri team that's 5-1, just lost a close game to Alabama. They got the leading rusher in the country and Ahmad Harvey, Hardy, and he does a really good job. But then you also flip over and you look at who they played outside of Alabama, and they hadn't played anybody. And they've been at home for every game, which is kind of crazy. They're going to the road for the first time. And, you know, Bo Prabula is in a situation that, you know, going on the road to Jordan Hare, even though Auburn's not having a good season, it's a tough place to get a first road start. You know, and he has a propensity to turn the football over. He's thrown 5 picks. He threw a couple against Alabama in crucial situations. So, you know, the thing is can Auburn muster up enough points? That's what it boils down to every week. And, you know, the offensive output has been horrendous. The defense gives Auburn a chance to win every game. But the fact is Auburn just does not do anything that scares people offensively. And until Jackson Arnold can turn the corner, or if he'll ever turn the corner, I think Auburn's going to struggle. You know, and Missouri does have a good defense. They got two really good defensive ends that really get a lot of pressure. You know, and Auburn struggled some this year with false starts and, you know, facing Texas A&M's defensive front and Oklahoma's defensive front. They struggled against those. And, you know, these guys are going to bring a lot of pressure. And Jackson Arnold holds the football a little bit too long. I think we all know that. So can Auburn overcome those obstacles that they've had the last several weeks? This will be the key. So I think it could be a low-scoring game because I think Auburn's defense is going to you know, stymie Missouri somewhat. But, again, it's the question of can Auburn make a few plays to win the game? And so far we haven't been able to do it.
Do you think they will, Brett? I mean, you've been picking Auburn. Are you going to stay with your team one more time?
I think I can go with them one more time, Gary. I think I can say that again, because I think Missouri kind of is a little smoke and mirrors. Again, I'm not taking anything away from their team. They're 5-1 and Auburn's 3-3. But, you know, it's a tough environment. And I don't think Missouri's a world beater. I don't think Missouri's better than Georgia. I don't. I don't think Missouri's better than Texas A&M. So I think if Auburn can actually play a clean game, can they finish a game, can they actually overcome adversity in a game, they can win a football game. And they just got to do it for themselves more than anybody, not the fans, not the media. You know, this team needs to get a win for themselves. And, you know, you never know. You know, once you get over the hump, you know, it could propel you to kind of get things rolling. But they've been so close, but yet so far away, you know, to kind of use an old cliche term, can they actually make some plays to win? I called it this morning. I said Auburn would win the game 17-14. I don't think it's going to be a very high-scoring game. I think it's going to be a game of defense and some opportunities, and I wouldn't be surprised if Auburn's defense came up with a way to score and help Auburn win a football game, and I think they need that right now with the way this offense is playing.
Couple more minutes with Brett Pritchard from the Auburn Blitz. All right, I want to ask you about, you know, I mean, the rumors are out there with Hugh Freeze. You know how it is, which we're seeing coaches get the plug pulled on them all over the country, you know, 4 or 5 games into a season. You know, if Auburn were to lose, I don't know what might happen, but there's some, you know, discussion out there. So I'm going to do the old what-if question for you. If Freeze doesn't make it, who are some candidates that you're hearing? You know, Eli Drinkwitz could be auditioning. I mean, he was on, you know, he was a young coach, but he was on that staff in 2010 with Gus Malzahn and Gene Sizek when Auburn won the national championship. Who are some others that are just being bandied about? I mean, it's just, you know, rumors and
right.
Gossip at this point, but who are some guys that are being bandied about as possible coaches for Auburn if Freeze doesn't make it?
Well, I mean, definitely that's one, because I think Eli Drinkwitz is, and I think everybody will agree, he's done a tremendous job at Missouri. If you look at Missouri on paper and you compare the 16 programs in this league, you go, well, that program off the hoof would be a program you would put at the bottom, you know, all time because of their location, facilities. I know they're upgrading and stuff, but in recruiting classes where they normally finish, you know, you would think that's a tough place to go win, but Eli Drinkwitz has done the direct opposite of that. So to me, going to a place like Missouri and having the success he's had really – speaks even louder volumes for him than it does if he was at another school. So he would definitely be something out, a guy that would be up for it. I definitely think John Summerall at Tulane is a name that continues to pop up. Now, you know, there's the bizarro world of John Gruden out there. I mean, is John Gruden going to bite the bullet and end up coaching? So there's going to be a lot of positions open at the end of this year. Gary, there's already positions open right now. There's going to be even more positions open. So there's going to be a lot of people trying to get coaches, and how many good coaches are there out there? So could John Gruden be a legit option? Would Rhett Lashley be an option? I mean, the same names that you're going to continue to hear that pop up. But, again, nothing imminent right now. And, you know, Auburn's trying to win a football game and trying to get in the win column in the SEC. And I think they've got a great opportunity Saturday night to do that. But I'm like you, if it doesn't happen and you go to 0-4, you got to really start thinking about, you know, what the future of this program looks like.
And finally, basketball. You and I remember it wasn't that long ago where you didn't even start practicing until October 15th. And then that was legit. I mean, they couldn't work out or do anything Now we're playing exhibition games and have the season start here in a couple of weeks. But the Stephen Pearl era is underway. The Ball and at Boutwell game a couple nights ago against Oklahoma State. Auburn loses in overtime. It's an exhibition game. But, you know, what did you see from Auburn? And you know, after that one game, where areas you think they need to improve? And you know, how do you feel about Stephen Pearl in his first season taking over for his dad, Bruce?
You know, it's an exhibition game, and I thought offensively they did pretty well. Obviously, Keyshawn Hall led the team in scoring with 26 points. But I was really impressed with Elijah Freeman. You know, really thought he did a great job, a very athletic 6'8 guy that can dribble, can get to the rim, can shoot from outside, gives you a lot of versatility. You know, Auburn had four guys in double figures. Todd Pettiford had a decent night, 17 points, didn't shoot the ball very well from the field, 4-16. But, you know, he kind of is the straw that stirs the drink, able to distribute the basketball, and that's what he's going to have to do even better this year than he did last year in a more enhanced role. But defensively is where Auburn's got to get better. I mean, they got scorched. You know, Roy got 28, Coleman got 28, and Curry got 23. And, you know, normally you get one guy that'll go for, you know, a 20-plus point night or a 30-plus point night, but you hardly see three do that. And so Auburn, from a rim protection standpoint, is probably going to have some difficulty this year. They just do not have the size that they've had the last several years. So they're going to have to adapt. And, you know, Stephen Pearl said that after the game. He said, we didn't do a very good job of preparing defensively for their guards. And, you know, I think Oklahoma State put some people on notice with some of their players. I mean, they got some really, really good players on that team. And, you know, they earned that win. You know, Auburn didn't play bad. You know, defensively they could get better. But offensively, I mean, they scored 95 points, but Oklahoma State figured out a way to do it a little bit better. So I think Oklahoma State sent a message to the Big 12 that they got a team to be reckoned with. But I think Auburn will be fine. Auburn's got a brutal non-conference schedule. They got some games that, frankly, I think this team needs to play. I mean, they need to be knocked around a little bit, and then I think they'll be better for it when conference play comes around.
Excellent update. Always, Brett, are you guys on location for the Auburn Blitz today at noon?
Yeah, we're on location at Laybark Pizza in Alexander City on Highway 63 and down close to Willow Point. So we are excited to be back at Laybark Pizza. It's a beautiful day outside. Come join us if you're in the area. We'd love to see you.
Thanks, Brett.
Appreciate it, Gary.
All right, 10:51. We'll take our final break. We'll come back. We're going to cut off the qualifying for the trivia contest. We'll have the trivia answer, and we'll roll that electronic roulette wheel for a winner. Also, I'll have my SEC point spread prediction, and then we'll close out the show for the next 3 hours plus. We'll be back after this.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
And coming up on the Friday edition of The Game, hours away from Alabama and Tennessee, we're going to do it with SEC Parlay Pick Contest presented by Brian Hart Construction. We're going to give away a gigantic tailgating package courtesy of our great sponsor, Piggly Wiggly. We'll talk with Brent Beard. We'll also talk with Lee Sterling. And we'll take your phone call starting at 2 p.m. here on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230. WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in
November 19th at Bryant Conference Center. Explore local shops, artists, and restaurants all in one place. Free admission, presented by Visit Tuscaloosa and Premier Service Company.
The Tide Tailgate Show is presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And by Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Online at Tuscaloosa
Generators. True South Generators. Online at truesouthgenerators.com. That's truesouthgenerators.com.
Get ready for the NASCAR Cup Series as it returns to Talladega. It's the Yellowwood 500 NASCAR Cup Series. The playoffs are here. Drivers battling it out at nearly 200 miles per hour. It's the most thrilling race of the season, the NASCAR Cup Series Yellowwood 500. Experience the adrenaline, the energy, and the unforgettable moments that make this playoff race. It's more than a race. This is Talladega. Get your tickets now at TalladegaSuperspeedway.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Mostly sunny and warm today, the high 85. Fair tonight, the low 65. Tomorrow, partially sunny with a high of 86. Sunday, cloudy and cooler, a good chance of showers and a few thunderstorms during the morning hours, the high 78. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 77 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
A national championship team covering a national championship team.
The best sports talk in the state.
Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
But my heart's a gold. I had a runaway
high. All right, 10:55, we're winding it down. And we've got a couple minutes to get everything done. First of all, let's do our Bama football trivia contest presented by T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery, University Mall, giving away that signed Roman Harper, Greg Gamble print, Hey Balls from 2005, signed by the artist, the numbered, and signed by Roman Harper, hand-signed. Our trivia question, who was the quarterback for Alabama in that 2005 game, the starting quarterback? The answer, Brody Croyle. Reed, how many qualifiers did we have?
We got 23, Gary.
23 qualifiers. If you qualify 15, your name has a 15 next to it. That's how we do it. Roll that electronic roulette wheel. Whatever number it stands on, it lands on, that's our winner.
Kim from Moundville.
What's the number?
Number 17, Kim from Moundville.
All right, say it one more time. I still didn't catch it.
Number 17, Kim from Monroeville, my bad.
Okay, yeah, all right. Kim from Monroeville, number 17, is our winner, and that is a really nice print. So make sure you send me her number, Reed, and I'll get in touch with Kim, and she can pick up her print. I think she comes to some games. So great, beautiful print that we gave away. Real quickly, I got to do my SEC point spread predictions. I was 3-4 last week. I'm 33-28 for the year. This week, it's all SEC versus SEC. Let me run through them real quickly. I've got Alabama minus the 8.5 against Tennessee. I've got LSU plus the 2.5. I still can't make Vanderbilt a favorite. I've got LSU plus the 2.5 against Vanderbilt and Nashville. I'm going to take South Carolina plus the 5.5 at home against Oklahoma. I'm going to take Arkansas plus 7.5 at home against A&M. I think that half point there is big. I think Arkansas is going to play well. I'm going to take Ole Miss, taking a lot of the underdogs, plus 7.5 at Georgia. A lot of half points here. I'm going to take Mississippi State plus the 9.5 at Florida. I am going to lay 13.5 with Texas at Kentucky, take the favorite there. And I'm going to take Auburn, getting 1.5 at home against Mizzou. So I'm taking a lot of underdogs, taking a lot of points. I think parity is here, so I think taking the points is a good thing, but I'm laying them with the Crimson Tide. All right, that's going to do it for this week's Friday at the 3. They're opening the doors here in a couple of minutes. Come on by and have lunch off that game day menu. Get ready for the football weekend. All right, Miller's Edge is coming up next for Reed Karch and Chase Brumfield back in the studio. I'm Gary Harris. Have a fabulous Football Friday. Join me tonight for your sports on WVOA 23, then for Football Friday at 10:30 tonight with all your high school football scores and highlights as well as college football previews. Have a great Friday, everybody, and I'll talk to you again on Monday morning at 9 a.m.